Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
When I was on my morning walk this morning, I truly got a welcome shot of one of those feel-good hormones in my brain. I tell you the truth, when I thought about our human condition segment tonight, which is hardly surprising because we're beginning a four-week pursuit tonight in pursuit of happiness. Each week, clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley is looking at every fascinating element, characteristic of what it means to be truly human. So I hope we're going to put a smile on your dial, and maybe even more, as you head into Monday. Lynn Worsley, happy to see you. It's great to see you tonight. Thank you so much. And dear listener, I'd love to hear from you tonight. 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House community Facebook page. Are there ways, even as we heard from Michael Davey, in the midst of life's tough stuff, when you've been able to turn it round and tap into that happy, even as we heard from him, humorous gene? How did you do it? Do you think it's nature? You were born to be happy? Or is it something you can learn? Is it nurture? 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House community Facebook page. Lynn, if you read any amount of social commentary at the moment, there seems to be quite a movement towards this thing of learning to be happy and stay happy. Where's that coming from, do you think?
Well, really, Lee, in the last 20 years, there's been an increase in the study of positive psychology. And that's really about looking at how people who are happy or doing well in their lives, how they do it and what they've got in common. Now, that's in opposition to what used to be studied, or is still being studied, really, is looking at people's risks and problems. Okay. So we've had quite a change in the last 20 years. And the movement has been sparked by some pretty key researchers. One of them is Martin Seligman, amazing fellow, and has researched since the 1960s. And he heads the University of Pennsylvania's Positive Psychology School. The other person is probably a little bit more well known to most people, and probably, I think, has been deemed to have the biggest voice in the world, and that's Oprah Winfrey.
Dr. Oprah.
And both of their work, through different modalities, one through research and the other through the publicity, have sparked a universal approach to the study of happiness and looking at the ways that we can change our attitudes. And really, when you look at the studies, what that happens is that you look at a normal population and you can either study two ends of that. You can look at the normal population and look at the people who are not doing well and study those people, which is predominantly what happened before the last 20 years. Or you can look at the different, completely different set of people and look at those people who are happy, have things going well, and start looking at what they have in common that is going well.
So do you have any ideas about what it is about our world or ourselves that, say, over these last couple of decades, that we've been more inclined to look at or seek happiness?
Well, yes, there's stacks and stacks of stuff. I could talk for hours. But let's say, if I give you a simple scale, say a scale from 0 to 10, yes. And if you're standing somewhere along that line from 0 to 10, 0's where there's absolute fear, intense fear in your life. Fear of abandonment, fear of failure, fear of loss, fear of being insignificant. And 10 is where there is hope, love, peace, joy, fulfillment, significance and relevance. Mm-hmm. Now, those people who are happy have their faces towards the hope end. They look towards the hope end. They're not right at the end. I don't think anyone is truly at the end, but they're facing that end. And they think about the progressive steps that they could make towards that hope. Okay. And they begin to take them, and they have an attitude that means when things happen that aren't helpful for them in their lives, they still have their face towards the hope. So they make decisions that move them that way. So they might imagine themselves doing something beautiful and experience joy, and the imagination that takes them towards the steps. But those who are not happy, they have their faces towards the fear end. Mm. And they look at that fear and they do things that in reaction to that fear. And those things they might do things to make them feel less guilty or less lonely, and they might behave in ways to avoid the fear. And this means that they're choosing things that are based completely on fear. And inevitably that moves them towards the fear, and it gets them sometimes making the fear come true.
So I guess you would say that you can train yourself or your mindset or your self-talk towards the hope end of the spectrum rather than the fear?
Yes, I think you could.
Yeah.
And that's what Martin Seligman's work is about. He says, you know, he wakes up every morning and finds himself feeling pessimistic and he actually tries really hard to think optimistically.
Mm.
And that's from the master himself who's actually found this way of thinking.
Count your blessings. It's another way of putting it.
Yes.
Is happiness the same as the Christian character or virtue that we're urged to adopt, and that is joy? Is that the same thing or different?
Yes. There's love, joy and peace is very similar to that. The Bible teaches us to put on joy. If we read the happy book, the Philippians, the happiest book in the Bible, I think, apart from Song of Songs,
yeah.
Would be to meditate on things. It basically says in the last chapter, meditate on things that are true, noble, reputable, authentic, compelling, gracious, the best, not the worst, the beautiful, not the ugly, things to praise, things to curse. Put into practice what you've learned from me. This is what Paul said, and do that. And God, who makes everything work together, will work you into His most excellent harmonies. Now, that's paraphrased from the Message, of course. But basically, the Christian character is that we are to put on joy, we are to be in that place, and deliberately face towards that.
Even as we heard from Michael, even when life is tough. I'm wondering what your strategies are that you've adopted. Maybe how your thinking has changed so you can be happier. Do you live at the more hopeful end of the spectrum rather than the fearful? If you look at and live at the fearful end of the spectrum, how do you break out of that? Have you been able to break out of that? How much does hope beyond your immediately difficult circumstances play in maintaining that? I've often said there's always tomorrow. The difficulties of the day pass, and hope does nurture happiness. 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House community Facebook page. Lynn, some of the findings that people who are facing towards that hope end of that 1 to 10 scale, what gives them that hope? What are some of the characteristics of that hope?
Now, there's a lot of findings, and a lot of people list them in different ways, but what I thought I might do is actually talk a little bit about what Oprah said.
Okay. Now, that's probably the first for Open House.
Yes. And she brought some very good lessons that were actually have been backed up by research. So she summarised her last show into 9 statements, and I think these very good characteristics of what it looks like for people who are facing that hope end. And those people would say, firstly, I have the power to change my life. I can do things. I can change things. They might also say I'm not alone because there are other people who have gone through these terrible circumstances like I have. Also, they would say that happiness is contagious, and that's very evident in the moment that you get happy and excited about things. It's contagious. Other people take it on.
For sure.
They also say that other people matter. So they look outside of themselves and look at others and try and care for others. The next one is that she says that everyone has a calling, and it's important for us to actually find that calling.
Mm.
The next one, the sixth one that Oprah says and obviously demonstrated all through her shows was giving is better than receiving.
When it comes to a trip to Australia.
Oh, yes. The seventh one I think is pivotal and is that I am worthy. Now, that's very different to I deserve. So you could say, look, I deserve to have a happy life and I deserve to have this nice new car and I deserve to have things. But to say I am worthy is very different. Mm. I am worthy isn't about anything that you've done or you deserve. It's about being worthwhile. Now, the eighth one is everyone wants to be heard and everyone needs to feel significant in some way and they want to be listened to. And the last one that she talks about is I will practice gratitude. And Martin Seligman himself has his gratitude letters and his gratitude exercises, which I think are pivotal in the way you treat people. So, and they're the nine characteristics.
I listened very carefully to those, and without, I don't want to artificially squeeze them into a framework independent of this, but most of those I could tick off neatly fitting into the Christian faith, though, of course, I can be happy without being a Christian. But those elements are very common.
Absolutely. Mm. And if you read some of the work by the very happy Dalai Lama, he'd say the same things, and some of the work he's come up with is also very similar.
Yeah.
But that's also similar to the Christian faith, but, of course, not limited to Christianity. But then if you look at Christianity, we can see that, that when we know each of us is regarded by God as being worthy...
Yes.
Enough for him to go to such enormous lengths to make us have a relationship with him by sending Jesus, we then move to a place of not feeling like we deserve to be happy, but we move to a place where we feel so happy because we're loved and we feel worthwhile. And that brings with it gratitude. And so again, from that, a desire to do things and help others who are also loved by God. And these behaviours then result in happiness.
With a sense of hope. Daniel's called in from Melbourne. Hi, Daniel.
Lee, how are you going?
Fine, thanks.
Excellent.
What would you like to say?
I would like to say that, first of all, I'm a life coach. I'm actually life coaching Nick Brax at the moment, who's on Dancing with the Stars. I'm sure you might have all seen him.
Hey, my niece is on it too. Jade Hatcher. I hope she's still on it. She might have been kicked out. I haven't been watching tonight.
I didn't watch it tonight either.
Sorry. We're not here to talk about Dancing with the Stars.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, but, as far as fulfillment goes,
yeah,
my main strategy that especially I teach my clients and everyone in life, and something that I've experienced through an addiction on drugs that I had, and it helped me get through that, definitely, and that is that you must take control over your thoughts. It is the only way you're ever going to be happy. So instead of just thinking and our mind wanders all day, every day, take a look at the cause and effect that your thoughts are having on your life. Mm. Your thoughts create your emotions. Your emotions determine how you act, and your actions determine the results you get in your life. So it all begins with the way you're thinking. And once you look at the cause and effect of your thoughts, you're able to redirect them.
Daniel, I'd be happy to have my life coached by you, mate. Thanks very much for calling in tonight.
Thank you.
Lynn, that's a very common thought in your sphere of work, isn't it?
Yes, and I think Daniel's just outlined the cognitive behaviour therapy model.
Yes, I know.
Very wonderfully.
Yes, yeah. Let's see where the rubber hits the road, as always. Can you give us some practical examples of that hope-fear kind of dynamic?
Yes, I can give you an example. And I've got an example of a young girl who was an amazing skater. Mm. A very difficult life, very, very hard life. But she would lose herself on the ice. When she spun, she felt the speed and the wind in her hair, and she felt freedom. And it was a place where she also gave joy to others when they watched her skate.
Yes.
She could teach little ones, and she inspired them when she found it difficult. But it was a place that she knew her worth, and she felt like she was in control. She could also manage her thoughts. She could manage her actions, and she was able to be grateful for the skill that she had. So this was her place of hope. This was her place of where she was number 10 on the scale when she thought about her skating. Now, she moved to a skate park, near a skate park, where she could be part of the community, and she could have offered to help and contribute to the building of the skills with others around her. However, she had a fear, an intense fear that she wasn't worth anything at all, and that everything she did would be a failure. And also that she would be insignificant and no one would care.
It's that self-talk again.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yes. So she, as a reaction to that, started to drink. She's taking drugs to dull her pain. And she then would choose people who would deliberately abuse her and who didn't care about her dream. And the more that fear drove her, the further that she went towards the fear.
Yes.
And the further she went away from the hope. And the more that she did that, she forgot what the hope was. And it became just like a muddled dream.
A tragic thing.
Absolutely. So she wasn't happy at all. She felt that she was happy when she was on drugs. Mm. But that was because it was just dulling the pain.
Yes.
If she could see her choices and focus on the hope and make decisions based on facing towards the hope, even the smallest choices towards that hope would be a step towards happiness for her. However, it's really hard to turn someone's head when they're so deeply entrenched.
Yes, indeed.
But it's not impossible.
No. In our 4-week pursuit of happiness, next week we're going to continue this and look at meaning and purpose and where that plays out. Just give us a brief sketch of that.
Well, one of the key factors that we need to look at in our lives is having a meaning and a sense of significance as to why we're here. And I think in our Christian journeys, that's something that is very important for us and that God gives us. But in life in general, people search for meaning. And it is that man's search for meaning, Viktor Frankl mentions in his book, that man's search for meaning that is the very core that separates us from the animals. And unless we have a sense of meaning, then there's often that void. And this has been significant in the area of psychology. So as much as, you know, we're probably people sitting at home as Christians saying we've known that for ages. The psychology likes to study evidence for things.
Yes.
And so now we're starting to find lots of findings that says that those people who have a sense of meaning in their life are very, very much happier.
We'll all look forward immensely to it, as always, Lynn Worsley, in The Human Condition. Thank you so much again for joining us. Across Australia, this is Open House.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.